The next speaker will be Dr. Paul Olin from the United States. He will speak on the aquaculture development in North America. Dr. Paul Olin obtained his PhD in zoology from the University of Hawaii. He worked as an academic coordinator in the University of California Sea Grant Extension Program, administratively housed at UC San Diego Scripps Institution of Oceanography. He conducts applied research and extension programs in aquaculture and in Northern California, engaged in endangered coho salmon recovery. Dr. Olin is a member of the U.S.-Japan Natural Resources Panel on Aquaculture, the NOAA-Korea Joint Coordination Panel of Aquaculture Cooperation, and the California Aquaculture Development Committee. And prior to his work at the University of California, he coordinated an international training program in shrimp aquaculture and was the aquaculture specialist for the University of Hawaii Sea Grant Program. Dr. Olin, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much. I'm very pleased to see so many people here after such a long day, and we've received a tremendous amount of information, and I hope you've managed to incorporate that. Well, much of the information that you heard is relative to the situation in North America, but I'm hopeful that I could provide you with some insights that are unique to that part of the world. Here's Canada and the United States, and what I would like to do is just with this pointer show you some general regions where aquaculture takes place and the species that are cultured there. In Canada, the Atlantic Maritime provinces located in this region are primary centers for production of Atlantic salmon and blue mussels. The mussel industry is primarily in Prince Edward Island. In the northeastern U.S., in this area, it's a center for shellfish culture, primarily the American cupped oyster, and there's a small amount of salmon farming in the state of Maine. Coming down to the Gulf of Mexico, there's a hard clam industry off the coast of Florida here, and there's oyster aquaculture takes place throughout the coastal Gulf. On the West Coast, the primary center for shellfish production is comprised mostly of Pacific oysters. In this region of the Pacific Northwest, in British Columbia and Canada, it's a center for production of Atlantic salmon. And then I won't talk much about it, but in southeastern Alaska here and along the coast of Alaska, there's a sizable net pen aquaculture program that's basically in support of a culture-based fishery. And fish farming is illegal in Canada, or I'm sorry, in Alaska. However, they do culture about 1.5 billion salmon fingerlings every year for 2 to 3 months in net pens, and then they release them to support the commercial fishery. Let me give you some quick statistics here. The population of the region is about 335 million people, 33 million in Canada, about 10 times that number in the United States. It's an urban-oriented population in both countries, with about 60% of Canadians living in urbanized Ontario and Quebec, 45% in six major cities. In the U.S., seven states have more than 10 million people, and there's about 250 million urban dwellers. At this point in time, it's primarily a young population, with 20% less than 15 years old and about 12% over 65. This, however, in the next decade will change as the baby boom generation moves and crosses that 65-year-old threshold. That component of the population will increase. It's an educated population. In Canada, 60% of citizens have some post-secondary education. In the United States, that's 54%. And roughly a quarter of both Canadians and Americans have a university degree. Give you some economic statistics. The gross domestic product in Canada is about $1.3 trillion, and as was the case with the population in the United States, it's about 10 times that amount at $13 trillion. GDP growth, this is in 2000, the decade from 1997 to 2007 was 2.7 and 5.2%. Fertility rate in Canada does not even replace the population. In the United States, it just barely does, yet both populations are growing as a result of immigration. Household incomes are high at $66,000 in Canada and $50,000 in the U.S., and at least in the United States, what this does is allows people to import considerable amounts of seafood. The unemployment rates in 2007 were fairly low. As you all might suspect, they're much higher than that now, hovering around 10% in both countries. Aquaculture is not a significant component of the overall agricultural economy, however, in North America, with about 5% of Canada's $105 billion agricultural sector represented by aquaculture. And in the United States, of the $276 billion agricultural sector, less than 1% of that is made up by aquaculture. Here you can see general characteristics of the sector from 1990 through 2008. The blue line represents value, and the magenta bars are the production level. You can see that production steadily increased up until about 2004, and then it's declined somewhat, and that's a result of declines primarily in channel catfish production as a result of increasing competition from imports primarily from Vietnam. You can see overall production was about 644,000 tons. It increased over the decade from 1998 to 2008 at an APR, or annual percentage rate, of about 1.85%. The value was about $1.6 billion, down from a high in 2004, and the value increased at an annual percentage rate of around 4.5%. Production is split, with the U.S. having primary about 75% and Canada 22%. However, when you look at the value, you can see the Canadian value is much closer to half at 42%, with the United States aquaculture product value of 58%, almost. And this is a result and a reflection of the higher value of the Atlantic salmon that's the primary fin fish cultured in Canada as compared to the channel cat cultured in the United States. Major species of production here, once again, you can see channel catfish is 36% of production, followed by Atlantic salmon and the American cupped or eastern oyster at 19 and 15% respectively, and then smaller percentages of crawfish, the Pacific oyster, the northern quahog or hard clam, and blue mussels. By division, you can see that freshwater fish are the largest component, 40%. Once again, this is production data. Diagenomous fishes is primarily Atlantic salmon with a small amount of rainbow trout. Mollusks at 29% and crustaceans at 9%. Marine fishes, in terms of production, you can see are 0% at this point in time. If we look at value, once again, you can see the increased value represented by Atlantic salmon, with the diagenomous fishes representing 44% of value. Freshwater fishes, once again, that's really primarily channel catfish at 32%. What's interesting here, though, is marine finfish show up on the value chart, and that just reflects the relatively high value of marine finfish. Mollusks at 15% and crustaceans at 8%. What I'd like to do with this is ask you to concentrate really just on two of the bars. One is the yellow-colored bar, that's channel catfish production. You can see from 1990 it increased pretty regularly up until around 2003, and then we started to see some declines, and that relates to the competition I mentioned earlier. In Canada is represented by the green bar there, and you can see that production increased significantly up until the early 2000s when they had an ISA, infectious salmon anemia outbreak. So production declined a little bit, and it's coming back up now. These are the fin fish other than channel catfish that are raised in the United States of America, and you can see that at best you've got level production in all of these species over the decade from 1998 to 2007. Now we'll take a look at invertebrate production. What I'd like to do is ask you to look first at this color bar. That represents production of the eastern oyster. And as you can see, production fluctuates pretty dramatically from one year to the next. This is largely a result of recruitment-related issues, although you can see between 2004 and 2005 there was a significant drop, and that was related to Hurricane Katrina and the loss of production in the Gulf of Mexico. In general, you can see in these invertebrate species slow but gradual increases. If you look at the tiny blue bar here and then follow that increase up, that's production of blue mussels in Canada. That's a very successful industry that has developed relatively recently. These blue bars here that you can see are red swamp crawfish production, and that's increased pretty dramatically over the last decade. And then the orange top bars represent Pacific oyster production, with the smaller orange part being the production represented by Canada and the rest by the United States. Some general characteristics of the sector. As was mentioned by a number of speakers, there's a need for supportive government framework. And I believe that over the last decade, both the Canadian and American governments have taken steps in that direction, but it's far from sufficient enough to fuel a dramatic increase in the industry. Having said that, the Canadian industry expanded by 54%. That was largely Atlantic salmon and blue mussels. However, no recent tenures have been issued to continue the expansion of that salmon industry. The American industry expanded by 17%, a little less than 2% per year during that decade. Channel catfish producers, as I mentioned, are meeting intense competition. Nonetheless, both the governments in Canada and the United States of America have production statistics and goals that they have set. The Canadian government would like to see an 8% increase to 214,000 tons in the next few years, with a farm gate value of over $1 billion. By 2020, they'd like to see that production exceed 308,000 tons, with a value of over $1.6 billion. The United States of America in 1999 came out with projections that said the industry had the potential to expand from 0.5 to 1.5 million tons by the year 2025, with a concomitant increase in value from $1 billion to $3 billion. These projections were based on an estimate that there would be about a 10% per year increase in production. And as I mentioned earlier, in reality, over the last decade, it's been a little less than 2%. In the United States, where is this production projected to come from? 760,000 tons from finfish, 47,000 tons from increased crustacean production, and 245,000 tons from mollusk production. I think what's interesting to note here that of that increase in finfish production, 590,000 tons is projected to come from marine finfish. And how are they going to do that? I think you're all well aware that the culture of marine finfish in more open ocean environments has made very significant advances over the course of the last decade. There are net pen designs, and particularly the net pen design in the center there is a sea station cage. Remarkably resistant to severe weather. There was a sea station cage deployed off Puerto Rico, and Hurricane Katrina passed directly over it. And the cage was not damaged, nor was the fish behavior in terms of their feeding. I should add here, though, that most of you are probably also aware that the U.S. Food and Drug Administration is on the verge of approving, for the first time, a transgenic animal for human consumption. If genetically engineered fish are approved and come into production, I believe there might be significant potential to expand aquaculture through recirculating systems. At this point in time in the United States, recirculating systems are pretty much limited to high-value niche marketing, primarily of live fish into ethnic markets. And the high price that they command will support the cost of recirculating systems. There are some exciting new species. All of these species that you can see here have been cultured. California yellowtail cobia, Hawaiian moy, the kahala, and Atlantic cod have all been cultured in pilot commercial scale endeavors. And there are many promising new species that could contribute to the diversity of aquaculture production. Here you see halibut, sablefish, and the basket cockle that in just the last few years, hatchery technology was worked out for that by researchers in British Columbia. Of course, two of the most popular species, your bluefin and yellowfin tunas. There are enormous challenges to closing the life cycle and successfully rearing large numbers of larval fish into fingerlings that could be stocked into cages. But I think with the focused research effort, and we've seen some very exciting advances in this fairly recently. Looking at the resources in North America that can support aquaculture development, both Canada and the United States of America have about 10 million kilometers of land. Canada has an enormous coastline of almost 240,000 kilometers. The U.S. coastline is just about 20,000 kilometers. Additionally, Canada has 16% of the world's freshwater resources. In contrast, the United States has fairly limited access to freshwater. There's a good industry sector in feed manufacture, primarily for salmon, catfish, and kraut. They can produce in excess of 800,000 tons per year and could readily expand. In terms of seed, the domestic production of seed is adequate to support the existing industry. There are more than 400 finfish hatcheries, 62 shellfish hatcheries. But I'll ask you to go back to the production projections from the United States and how much of that was marine finfish culture. There are no commercial finfish hatcheries in North America today. Both Canada and the United States have very good animal health programs and access to veterinary services. Following the ISA outbreak in the early 2000s, Canada developed a national aquatic animal health program and since then has managed to avoid any further complications resulting from ISA. The United States of America is right now finalizing a national aquatic animal health plan. One impediment to aquaculture development, in particular small-scale aquaculture development, is access to capital. Commercial capital is limited to all with large corporations, and that principally means Atlantic salmon farming. There are some government programs that are available to help smaller-scale growers, such as Farm Credit Canada and the USDA Farm Service Agency, that can provide assistance to new and existing small farmers to help them with operations and equipment improvements. Looking at some of the issues and successes that we've seen, there has been a lot of research on feed development. There are new feeds that are available that reduce pollution, primarily phosphorus pollution, that increase growth and survival. There's significant research programs to reduce fish meal and oil content in fish feeds. Fish don't necessarily need fish meal, but they need the ingredients that are found in fish meal. And if you can source those in other products, then the need for fish meal goes down. Department of Commerce, NOAA has an alternative feeds initiative specifically to spearhead research efforts to identify alternative to fish meal and fish oil. In terms of the future, I think new species with cultural potential will be a big part of it, and we need to continue that research support. Here in the lower left, you can see a geoduck clam, which is a new industry that has developed in the Pacific Northwest and has been very, very successful. There's a great deal of interest in species like red drum in the Gulf of Mexico, and in Canada there's a research program looking at the potential for wolffish aquaculture. When you talk about aquaculture and the environment, the challenges become more significant. There's a very strong and well-funded opposition movement in North America to aquaculture, particularly finfish aquaculture. And it's a real challenge to educate people who have value-based beliefs. There was a study done in North America, and 61% of people who said they were opposed to finfish aquaculture, in particular salmon aquaculture, didn't know why they were opposed to it. They were just opposed to it. But we do know that there is some good science out there, and we can culture finfish in marine cages sustainably. The challenge is getting that information out to the public, and I'm confident that the public, when they have accurate information, will make good decisions. At this point, however, as I said, there are well-funded opposition movements that are at times driving public policy. We do have offshore installations that have demonstrated with a number of species in a number of locations that aquaculture can be done sustainably. This has happened in Puerto Rico. It's happened in Hawaii as well. Catfish industry that developed in the southeastern United States was certainly a success. It's had some challenges recently, as I said, related to competition and related to also to the diversion of corn for the production of ethanol, which has driven food prices very high. Salmon is still a work in progress, primarily just because there's still so much public opposition to it. The way forward, I think, is to continue proactive environmental management. FAO has recently released the National Aquaculture Sector Overview map collection, and resources such as this and some of the other publications are very helpful in terms of educating the public, because FAO is not perceived as having any bias in one direction or another. Marine spatial planning in North America is a very major activity, and there are concerted efforts, in my view, to limit aquaculture in marine waters through marine spatial planning. So it's essential that the aquaculture community be at that marine spatial planning table. Talk a little bit about markets and trade. The U.S. Is a major importer of seafood. It imports about $14.2 billion worth of seafood while exporting about $4 billion. 83% of the seafood that's consumed in the United States is imported. Canada, on the other hand, exports about 90% of its aquaculture production. As further evidence of what an importer the United States is, 96% of the export sales in Canada in 2007 were imported into the United States. This is just a graph I wanted to put up to illustrate the dramatic increase in imports of primarily bassa and tra catfish from Vietnam into the United States. In 1998, almost zero, rising to above 45,000 metric tons in 2008. The blip that you see right here is not real. The actual import curve should go more like that. However, there were some issues with identification of catfish as such, and as a result, the statistics don't convey the actual import. So in certain respects, there has been good market development. Certainly Canada has had good market development in the United States for their product, but there is a need for sector expansion. In North America, there are excellent food safety and training programs as well as HACCP programs. And the industry is finally starting to get a little proactive rather than being reactive in the face of opposition. They're starting to put out information relative to the actual production of Atlantic salmon and the environmental interactions that take place. They're inviting the public out to visit their farms so that they can see that it truly can be done in a sustainable fashion. There's a need to expand domestic markets and control production costs, particularly in the face of the intense competition that U.S. catfish farmers are seeing. And I personally think that the industry should much more aggressively market quality and health benefits. Eating two meals of oily fish a week lowers the risk of death from heart disease, and some populations say as much as 35%, and that's phenomenal. It enhances brain development and cognition in infants, and low seafood intake has been identified as the second largest cause of diet-related deaths in America. These are enormous marketing assets that I think could be taken much greater advantage of. Looking at the contribution of aquaculture to food security, social, and economic development in North America, there's little contribution to food security. As you can see, 83% of food consumed in the U.S. is imported. Employment has risen from about 40,000 in 1998 to 52,000 in 2007, annual percentage rate increase of about almost 3%. Recognizing that aquaculture is a fairly small component of the agricultural sector, it is, however, extremely important in some communities and parts of the country. In Klemtu, British Columbia, there's a Kitisou First Nation whose economy was in dire straits, and they teamed up with a multinational to develop a salmon farm and processing facility, created 45 jobs and $1.6 million in wages. Employment in that local small rural community dropped by more than 50%. The processing plant generates about $30 million in revenue. Farmed salmon is the largest food export of the province of British Columbia, and it's the largest crop of New Brunswick's agri-food sector. In the southeastern United States, in the states of Arkansas, Louisiana, and Mississippi, it generates almost 4,000 jobs and a payroll of about $56 million. That's 30% of the total United States of America aquaculture payroll. Similarly, in Washington State, the shellfish industry represents about 15% of the aquaculture payroll at $27 million, and over 1,200 jobs are created by that industry in a relatively small region. There are external pressures on the sector, as you've heard from many of the other speakers. There are pathogens concerns. There are concerns about climate change and sea level rise. We have seen some very severe weather patterns in North America. I think one of the gravest concerns is ocean acidification. Off the coast of the Pacific Northwest, we have seen very good evidence that ocean acidification is resulting in some catastrophic losses in shellfish hatcheries, primarily the Pacific oyster. And as I've mentioned earlier, competition is something that U.S. producers, Canadian producers are going to have to face. The role of shared information, research, training, extension, and networking is absolutely critical to the continued expansion of the industry. Research is supported by the Department of Fisheries and Oceans Canada, by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Looking at a number of things, new species development, improved health management, selective breeding, improving seed quality, enhanced grow-out technologies, and improved husbandry nutrition and feeds. And as evidence of how important and critical this research foundation is, every species that comprises the aquaculture industry in North America that has benefited significantly from publicly funded research. And that includes the species that you can see listed there, many of which I've talked about already. In terms of governance and management of the sector, I couldn't agree more with Carlos. But the government in Canada and the United States of America are both supportive of aquaculture development, and I think that support has increased significantly in the last decade. However, it is still insufficient to spur expansion of the industry, or let me say significant expansion. Aquaculture is managed by a complex mix of federal, provincial, state, and local authorities. We need to have concerted efforts to improve aquaculture management. There's a need to increase financial support for research and development. To develop techniques to culture marine finfish is not going to be easy, and it's not going to be expensive, and it's going to require a long-term sustained investment. As evidence of government support, they do compile statistics on aquaculture production, which helps to generate policies in support of the industry. Canada does a terrific job of this with annual statistical reporting, and in the U.S. there's a census that's done every 5 years. And both governments do strongly support best management practices and help to develop those. I don't want to go through these individually, but both the United States of America and Canada, in their governance, have taken a lot of the issues that were identified in the Bangkok Declaration and implemented those to help to develop the sector. In some cases, it has been successful. The Atlantic salmon industries in Canada and the blue mussel industry have significantly expanded. In other areas, I think these need to be addressed in terms of targeting marine finfish, which I think will be the lion's share of increased production if that production does materialize. In closing, I would like to thank the organizers of this conference, the Network of Aquaculture Centers in Asia Pacific, the Department of Fisheries of Thailand, and the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations. Kap Khun Ka. Thank you.